Casey Corcoran Podcast.
At Southwest Airlines, we pride ourselves on a smooth flying experience.
But over the holiday season, we messed up. Our system collapsed and thousands of flyers were left stranded. And you understandably screamed at us for days on end, even more than you usually do.
And sure, we lost $800 million in revenue and are being investigated by the FAA, which is why this year we are dedicated to making things right with a better, more modern Southwest experience.
For starters, we are finally upgrading our entire communication system to 2008 Dell computers.
That's right. We are saying bye-bye to those 2002 IBM ThinkPad laptops with a little red nipple in the middle.
Also, no more missing baggage at baggage claim. Guaranteed.
From here on out, all luggage will be sorted by color.
That makes it your responsibility, not ours.
So, if you're going to Dallas, bring a red suitcase.
Don't show up with a blue bag. Blue bags go to Charlotte.
And make sure to get to the airport early to enjoy our new Southwest Premier Lounge, located inside an active Starbucks. We just get there early and hold down two or three tables for y'all. Southwest is also modernizing our entire air traffic control network.
No more pen and paper. Our air traffic specialists will now be using our old IBM ThinkPad laptops with a little red nipple in the middle.
Now I get a proper flight schedule instead of finding out where I'm going 15 minutes before takeoff.
And now we're streamlining check-in, but not having one at all.
We're just trying to fill up the plane and go.
You showed your ticket at security, right? You good.
We're also upgrading our in-flight staff strictly with people who used to work at Waffle House. So come at them if you want. But these big bitches don't play.
Here at Southwest, mistakes were made. And that's on us. Mostly. Some of it's on you.
Hey, man, let's keep it real. You bought the ticket.
Again, you bought a Southwest ticket. You obviously don't respect yourself, so why should we?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
for flying Southwest.
Welcome aboard.
Southwest Airlines. If it's that important to you, just walk.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, March 14th, 2023. Only 16 days now until opening day. How you doing, kids? You are at jconline.com. I love that Saturday Night Live thing about Southwest Airlines. It's absolutely fantastic. Southwest was the first airline to sort of, I guess you'd say, mess around with the security warnings and all the instruction and all that sort of stuff at the beginning of the flight. You know, you get on any other airline, even today, you get on any other airline, and all that stuff is as serious as a heart attack. And, you know, it's probably gotten a lot more serious since 9/11. I totally understand that. But before 9/11, especially, you get on Southwest, and those people were like, I thought they were stand-up comedians. And they were reading everything. You know, the FAA required that they do the instruction about the, you know, the seatbelt demonstration and flotation devices and everything, that they had to do that. That's governmental law right there. They had to do it, but nobody said they couldn't have fun with it. So they went ahead and they did it, and they had fun with it. Now, I remember, and this was probably back in the 80s, radio stations back then, we do it different now, but back then you had to do that thing where you hear the doo. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. If this had been an actual alert, you would have been instructed where in your area to tune for news and official information, all that sort of stuff, and you hear those tones. So some enterprising young talent somewhere, I don't even know what city it was, said, well, let's do what Southwest Airlines does. Let's do the emergency broadcast system thing, but let's do it funny. And so they had music, and they had this announcer, and they had comedians, and they did everything. They said everything that the government requires and the FCC requires you to do. They did it all, but they did it with sound effects and comedy and the whole thing. And the FCC came along and said, over our dead fucking bodies, go back to the original way. And they were going to fine them. And I guess they smoothed the whole thing over. The government does not have a particularly good sense of humor when it comes to stuff like this. But for some reason, you know, the airlines and Southwest got away with it. Anyhow, there used to be the system back in the 50s and 60s called Conelrad. Conelrad was a thing, if you can find an old radio, if you have something really old, like some sort of an heirloom in the family, and it's old radio, there should be two little, like little triangles, two tiny little triangles, little divots, if you will, in the selector, when you tune the thing, usually you would just grab the thing and just twist it, and that would change the signal that you were picking up. And there were two. There was one at like somewhere in the fives, like 560 or 570 or something like that. And then there was another one at like 1420 or something. And those signals were reserved for the federal government to use. This was all during the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis and all that sort of stuff. And they basically said, if there's some sort of emergency, go to one of these two spots on the dial, and then you will get that news and official information about whether or not the Russians have fired missiles from Cuba at Florida. So all of that stuff was eventually replaced and upgraded, and every 20 years or so they come up with a little better system. So I wasn't actually going to play this today, but as I'm thinking about it right now, this is worth another spin from the archives. I'm going to pull this out right now while we're talking. I had no intention of playing this today, but I'm going to, because it's actually really funny, by the way, and I haven't played it in years. But here's what happened. This was back on the old, we might have been doing the Clue morning show back then, KLOU. This would have been in, 1999, maybe? So this was a couple of years before 9/11, so you could still make jokes about this stuff. So it was one of those days we were just doing the show, and John Canavera, John, as we call him, who is now a big shot with Live Nation, and then Mark Close did the show with us at that time. I've said this before, I'll say it again. That's my bad. I should have hired Close to be on the morning show years prior to that. I had no idea that Close was as funny as he is. And Mark's really a funny guy. And like after three shows, when we put him on the morning show with us, I was just banging my head against the table going, why didn't I do this sooner? That's how funny Mark is. But anyhow, so he's in the studio. So you got Close, you got John. I'm trying to remember who else is. One of our engineers you will hear at the time, a really, really great guy by the name of Joe Raftery. And he's on the phone. So we're sitting there one day, and John, who just made sure that stuff like this was taken care of, being the good producer that he was, said there's going to be what they call an EAS test, Emergency Action System, I believe it was. And I said, we're in the middle of a show. Can't somebody else do it? And then Close chimed in right away, as you'll hear. And it turns out this was a lot more serious than I thought it was. Now, I've been through these EAS tests before, but they usually don't run them during a morning show. That's just not, it just doesn't make any sense, because things are busy and the time is expensive. And they usually put them in the midday show or the afternoon or something like that. So it was sort of unusual. I had never done one before. And I was thinking, well, let's just blow it off. And they were like, you can't blow it off. I'm like, well, who's going to stop me? And as you'll hear, there were a lot of things that were going to stop me. Now, I'm going to play this for you. And then when it's over, I'm going to tell you something absolutely fascinating that I think you'll probably be pretty surprised to hear. All right, so let's go back into the archives. I believe the year is 1999.
Well, while that song was playing, this is one of my favorite topics, the emergency action, it used to be called the emergency broadcast system.
It's the EAS. The emergency,
now it's called the emergency
alert system, I guess.
Yes. Alert system.
Yeah.
Okay, now, what happens is a little light goes off on the wall, and a little piece of paper comes shooting out of a slot down beneath me here. There are some that they're like little tests. This is a test of the emergency action system. You've heard all that stuff before. But this one is different. This one actually takes over the radio station.
If you don't press, you can play it now if you want.
Yeah, you can set it up and play it when you want to.
But if you don't, it'll automatically
seize the signal.
I want to see it seize the signal.
I believe it's
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
5 minutes.
So this thing hit it. I thought this thing hit 7:32, so it should have taken over already.
15 maybe then.
Maybe it is 15. I'm not sure. All right, 2.5 hours. Some. Are you sure it's a test? You sure it's not?
It's an required monthly test.
You should explain what this is for, too, because people listening.
This is for nothing.
No, it's
not. This is for the government to make you believe that somehow, if we're attacked, that somehow the radio station, Jesus, what now? Hello, you're on the air.
Hey, it's Joe.
Hey.
It's 15 minutes.
15 minutes. It is 15.
Okay. Yeah. So if I don't, what time did it come across? 7:32?
It's on the receipt.
3 or something like that.
Yeah. So actually it looks like in about,
it's over there in the
1, 2, 3, 4, maybe in about 3 to 4 minutes is when it will
some
cease.
Kind of bizarre way of making you think that if there really is an emergency, that we'll actually stay on the air to warn you about
stick
it.
Around.
Right. You know?
Right.
And so this, long. All
this is,
sorry.
This is a bunch of crap from the government that makes you think that somehow if Saddam Hussein loses his mind and launches a Scud in this direction.
Right.
That somehow the radio station is going to be in a position to help your ass out.
Well, see, this goes back to earlier when you were talking about grocery stores. Here's the difference. You don't get emergency alert systems at Schnucks.
Joe, this one ought to be good. Okay, Close is going to compare grocery stores to being attacked in a nuclear holocaust.
If you were going to Schnucks and all of a sudden we would be attacked, I doubt very much that the guy would going to go, attention in aisle 7, we're being bombed. They're gone. But since we're a government
agency. But aisle 6 is okay.
Aisle 6, you're
they're
cool.
They're just going after produce.
Everybody get to frozen foods immediately. It's the difference because we
take
are
take cover
all
in the dairy
Saddam
section.
Saddam Hussein cannot grow cauliflower in the sand. He's coming after our cauliflower.
We are owned and operated by the government, basically. Okay. And that's what it's all about.
All right, so 7:32 is what time this thing came by. So what you're basically saying is sometime in the next 90 seconds, Joe?
Yeah, basically.
Sometime in the next 90 seconds, what's going to happen? I'm going to be talking, all of a sudden, just going to cut us off?
Yeah. What happens is it seizes the air chain.
It
kills all of your stuff and just goes straight into the air chain.
So I could be in the middle of some bit of hilarious comedy.
Yeah, what are the odds? Go ahead.
And the and the government is just going to butt in on the show.
Right.
Yeah.
And start talking.
Because they own the signals. They own the airwaves.
They can kiss my ass.
Well, they could probably do that if they wanted to.
What, Joe?
Well, the whole idea is they give you 15 minutes to own it yourself.
Right.
You know, 15 minutes to own it yourself. Joe, that's an interesting perspective. You're in control of your own destiny for 15 minutes.
After that, the government takes over.
And they say, we're coming in.
Big Brother is watching.
Okay, now if they don't interrupt within the next 30 seconds, then they ain't going to do it, and the system doesn't work, and that means we're being attacked.
Joe, are you sure this is this the monthly today?
Yeah, it is.
Okay,
one of our sister stations already called me about it.
Oh, it's so funny because you'll be talking.
I'm up already.
You'll be talking, all of a sudden it goes tick, 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 and you hear this little ticking noise, and you're gone, so.
It's kind of like when the sale goes through.
Exactly. That's a determination.
They sort of seize the signal and do what they want.
Except this is only monthly, and the sales go through more often,
They're going to give us 15 minutes, too. Your 15 minutes is up, buddy.
That's right. Change of format. Tick, 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 tick.
We got 2 minutes.
2 minutes. There are 2 minutes remaining.
We're going to DEFCON 5.
That's right. Yeah. Don't be alarmed, ladies and gentlemen, when this happens.
Could it possibly have had anything to do with the changing of the clocks?
27 people were injured this week after they were told to spring ahead and fall back.
All right. we don't know anything. All right.
Exactly 2 minutes.
We have exactly 2 minutes. So now here's Mark with the news.
quick. This is the way to do it.
Here's your alert.
This is the way to do it.
This just in. Bend over. Grab your ankles. Kiss your butt goodbye. That message from the EAS. That's all I'm telling anybody.
So now, Joe, just so that people who are listening to this have some idea what we're talking about. In the event of an actual emergency, how would this system that is going to interrupt us sometime in the next 90 seconds.
Minute 30.
How would it help us? John all of a sudden is the Secretary of Defense. John thinks he's in war games.
I'll be in the bunker if you need me. See you later.
I have thermonuclear impact in 30 seconds.
We have Joshua sitting here. How is this supposed to work in the event of an actual emergency?
Well, there's like codes and things.
Yeah.
If you look at the EAS.
We have code words. You open it up, and there's special code words.
Where are their code words?
It's not to be open until an actual
That is 1 minute.
JC has to open it, then Close has to verify it.
You're supposed to know. Yeah, that's right. We crack the little plastic thing. We each have a key to the men's room. That's where we go verified. And hide.
Wait
and we
minute.
Get bombed.
What happens if I open it now? What are they going to do to me?
Oh, I don't know.
All right, the air raid has begun.
45 seconds.
Close has the con.
That's right.
Close has been.
That's what it is.
Close has been conning people for years.
Better believe it, pal. Yeah. Built a career on it.
Am I supposed to know how this works?
30 seconds.
John, and you better learn.
Don't go now, it's too late. You're scaring us.
And you better learn pretty fast. You got 30 seconds. Right. The entire St. Louis area
is
toast.
So in the event of an actual emergency, Joe, what would happen?
15 seconds.
I can answer that.
Be quick.
All right, Mark, you answer. Go ahead.
You'll be given code words
to verify. Who's gonna give it?
Code words in the studio. In the book.
Where? Five.
That's back in the book for the EAS. To verify.
I love you all. It's been good working with you.
Yeah. Love
you, see you
Ma.
Later.
Love.
This is the required monthly test. This station serves the bi-state St. Louis operational area.
Somebody get me to a hospital.
Or get the hell out of here.
They obviously recorded that guy next to the surf somewhere. What was all that noise in the background?
Right. Now, Joe, I go back to my original question. How is that supposed to help me?
That there? That won't help you, but if there is a real emergency, they'll, like, send some other message along with it.
We'll send some other message.
They assume we'll stay here to read it.
That is exactly correct.
Like, I assume you're in there to read it within 15 minutes if there is a real emergency. Mm-hmm.
That's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the whole thing Close was talking about the code, that's just to make sure it is a real emergency.
You verify whether it's a real code or a real emergency.
But are you trying to tell me that somewhere in the studio there's an envelope, and inside the envelope there's like a code word?
Yes.
Yeah, the EAS book.
But
sure
now,
is.
But now, if I go to that envelope right now and open that up, what happens to me?
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, it can't be an envelope. It has to be a case where you crack it.
Read what it says in the front. It says authenticator words.
EAS authenticator list for official use only. Do not open until needed to authenticate actual emergency messages.
And it's got a different word for each month.
Note the authentication words received on the message, e.g. Alpha Golf.
Ooh, cool.
Open
Bravo One.
That's Army Talk.
Open the red envelope. Proceed down the column of the current month to the appropriate day noted, being careful to dodge the missiles.
That's right.
In the message and compare the words received in the message against the authentication list. If they match, you have an authentic message. Test authenticator words are listed below. Note the authentication words received in the message, Romeo Juliet.
Cool.
This is like Crimson Tide.
Cool.
Compare the test authenticator words in the month received in the message against the words.
This is funny, don't you guys?
Yeah.
This is serious.
Against the words listed below, if they match, you have an authentic test message. I don't have the slightest idea what I just read.
And you don't need to know.
And with Scud missiles being launched at me, I'm going to be sitting here going, all right, Alpha, Golf,
Romeo, Juliet. We're for it out there. It's because it's a verification so that they know you're not getting a false alarm, false alert.
We're in the month of April.
There's no station in St. Louis. We wouldn't want to do a false nuclear alert or anything.
Okay. And then the termination word is Foxtrot Charlie. The hell is going on? Suddenly,
it's too obvious. Though.
Suddenly, it's like an episode of.
I mean, if I was going to write a fake warning, I'd put Foxtrot Charlie because it seems like an obvious code word.
Especially now that we just broadcast.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you, Joe.
Was I not supposed to do that?
Probably not.
On that note, I got to go.
Engineering is bailing out, ladies and gentlemen.
He's got resumes to send out.
There's nothing on here that says I can't read it. I could have read last month, and then we wouldn't be any...
JC, there are four men in black suits and sunglasses with large guns at the front door looking for you.
What else is new?
If they're like the earthquake, or if there's a big storm coming in, they also give you an EAS alert, and you can get on the air and say,
I'm hiding under the counter.
And the ultimate design is also to allow the president from the White House to be able to override programming on every radio station in America.
That's right.
And address everybody simultaneously.
And it'll be like one station that will stay on the air within this like three-state area. You know what station that is?
Yeah, I can just imagine.
There you go.
WEW?
That's it, baby. 1,000 red hot watts.
Can't stop Glenn Miller just
course,
for an emergency.
It's a daytime station, so we get bombed at night. We're SOL. You know, it ain't gonna help.
Bad planning. Our bad.
Well, that's not even fair.
What do you mean it's not fair?
It's not even fair that they should be on the air.
But you know why they do that?
Because you know what would happen if there was a real alert and they said, all right, guys, here's the deal. Every radio station is off the air. KMOX is the only station on the air. You guys are it. You have to save St. Louis. One by one. Heart attack, heart attack, heart attack, heart attack, heart attack. Seven guys piled up in the hallway would look like Jonestown.
But they got all the funeral homes on the air anyway, so they're working trade. I mean, that's part of the deal.
Kudas just backed up a giant meat wagon to one Memorial Drive and starts dragging guys out by their ankles.
They're throwing corpses off the third floor. All right, here's another one.
They're using a pitchfork. They're just where goes another one?
Here's another guy from Continuity. Take him too.
Body stacked up like Jonestown.
Wow, it has been years since I heard that.
That was also Steve Schlanger in there and our buddy Lance Hildebrand, who did traffic for us for years and was also one of the funniest people I know. So all of that, it was like war games. They're going to DEF CON 3. That stuff was real back then. Now, like I said, the policy has changed. The technology has improved a little bit. I mean, you heard that thing, the alert that came in was like, it sounded like something from the 1950s. It was all garbled and everything, and you're sitting there while the bombs are falling. We're supposed to be opening envelopes and matching code words, and for God's sakes. So again, that was 1999, and you know what happened? Like, 2 years later, and amazingly, after all this testing, and they do it on television too. You're sitting there watching something, and just in the moment of law and order, you're watching, and the big reveal is happening. You're going to find out who the bad guy really was. There's nothing you can do to stop it. You can't interrupt it at all. And like I said, amazingly, 2 years later, on 9/11, the emergency action system that we just alluded to here did not activate. So I didn't even think of that until a couple of days after 9/11. It's like, wait a minute, why didn't that thing go off? We've been practicing, we've been rehearsing, we've had these mandatory tests that go on once a month on radio stations. 9/11 hits, and the guy's minding the store is like, well, we're saving it for a real emergency. Well, thanks. Maybe one will come up. So I was, sort of half serious at the time, but it really is true. The government trying to convince you that under some sort of attack situation that broadcasters are going to somehow be in a position to let you know what you're supposed to do. And Close made a comment in there that's actually really rung true. You go to most radio stations now, 6 o'clock at night until about 4 o'clock in the morning, there's not even a live human in the building. Everything's been pre-recorded. Everything's been computerized. Everything is, nothing requires there to be a live person in there. And the radio station saved all this money by just having everything automated. I remember John McCain, while he was still alive, that was actually unnecessary to say while he was still alive. He didn't do anything after he died. John McCain there was some sort of congressional committee years ago where there was some sort of train derailment. Not unlike these situations in, Palestine, where they're having all these, problems with the train derailment that occurred there. There's been two more since then, by the way. But they were sitting there. It was a situation similar to that. And the first responders and the fire department and everything like that started calling radio stations to let people know what to do. And that's when they found out there was nobody home, nobody at the radio stations. It happened like 8:30 at night. And they're like, all right, call all the media outlets, call all the radio stations so they can make the announcement to evacuate in these areas, and these areas are fine. And then these areas were still not sure, so be on standby. And they're calling up. The phone's just ringing and nobody's answering. And that got the attention of John McCain. And for a while, he was really sort of on the warpath with that whole thing. And then it just dissipated and I never heard anything about it again. It's a radio's dirty little secret. One of many. 9/11. And the emergency action system does not go off. Wow. Does make you wonder what would have to happen to trigger the whole thing, huh? Everybody's got dirty little secrets, not just the broadcasting industry. Show business. Some of your favorite celebrities have disturbing links to serial killers. For example, Ashton Kutcher and Michael the Hollywood Ripper Gargiulo. This is in 2001. Ashton Kutcher was supposed to go on a date with a woman, but when he showed up at her house, she didn't answer the door. So he peeks through the window and saw what he thought were wine stains on the carpet, and he goes home. It turns out they were blood stains. The woman he was supposed to go on the date with had been murdered, and Ashton Kutcher actually testified at his trial. Debbie Harry from Blondie for years has been saying that she accepted a ride from Ted Bundy back in the 1970s, had a jump out of his moving VW bug when she realized he was up to no good. A lot of people don't believe the story, but she is sticking to it. And then there was the case of Woody Harrelson and Charles Harrelson. Woody's father, Charles, was a hitman who was involved in dozens of murders. He even claimed he killed JFK. Woody eventually developed a guarded relationship with his dad in prison. Chris Farley and somebody named Ed Gein, G-E-I-N. Farley grew up in view of the Mendota Mental Health Institute in Wisconsin. By that time, it was home to Ed Gein, the maniac who inspired both Psycho and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. As a kid, Chris was worried that this guy and one of the other psychos would escape and break into their house. I think everybody knows that Dennis Wilson of the Beach Boys was hanging out with Charles Manson for a while. Some of that was depicted in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the Quentin Tarantino movie, which I've decided I want to watch again, and I'm going to feel the same way about it. You know, you can go to the well once on Inglourious Basterds, and you say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do this movie, we're going to change the course of history, we're going to alter the ending so what actually happened historically is going to be depicted for 99% of the movie, and then at the very end, we're going to change the ending. We're not going to have it being historically factual. Okay, you do that once, great. You can't come back and do it again, which is what they did in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But having said that, the first 99% of the movie is just awesome. And Brad Pitt has never been better. It's such a good movie. If you aren't planning to go to the Dogtown Parade on Friday, start drinking hot coffee now. It is going to be brutally cold out there. It may not get out of the upper 30s on Friday. And on Saturday for St. Louis FC and that soccer match, that's also going to be brutally cold. Let me see exactly what they're saying. Let me just see St. Louis. Christ, it's only 34 degrees. Wow. All right. Friday for the parade, partly cloudy, 25-mile-an-hour winds and a high of only 42. That means 30s most of the day. So I was right on that. Overnight low 24. Come back on Saturday night. Well, yeah. See, again, 25-mile-an-hour winds. The high on Saturday, only 36. And the low will be 20. So at game time, you're talking about maybe about 30 degrees. Dropping through the upper 20s on Saturday evening. No, thank you. I put something up on my Facebook page about a week ago that said, will Donald Trump be indicted on the 15th? Supposedly somebody in the Justice Department, and this is why I said it this way, supposedly somebody in the Justice Department let the cat out of the bag last week and made a comment that inadvertently tipped somebody who was paying very close attention off to the idea that this indictment was coming. Well, doesn't look like that's going to happen now because Michael Cohen testified yesterday and he's coming back tomorrow. So that is the 15th. However, all you're seeing on television right now on the cable news channels are people who are saying, yeah, he's going to get indicted and it's probably going to happen in the next week or two. That's what they're saying now, in the next week or two. Although, you wouldn't see a trial on this thing for at least another year. And the people, by the way, making these, I guess you'd say, predictions on Donald Trump's indictment are not slouches. They're not slackers. They're like former prosecutors. There's the people who have been around this their entire lives and they know exactly what certain moves by the Justice Department and prosecutors mean when they do them. And they're like, oh, yeah. And supposedly Trump knows it, too. The story was he was at Mar-a-Lago last weekend, surrounded by his entire legal team, trying to figure out what they're going to do when this thing actually comes down. All right, we got March Madness kicking off here today. Here's some stats. Corporate losses due to unproductive workers during March Madness, $16.3 billion, that's with a B. Percentage of Americans willing to call in sick or skip work to watch games, 37%. The annual revenue of the NCAA in 2022, $1.14 billion. What players are paid for participating in the tournament, we know that one. Bupkis. Number of college basketball programs involved on corruption cases involving payments to players since 2017, 12 plus. Salary of University of Kansas Bill Self, college basketball's highest paid coach, $10.2 million. The governor makes $710,000, by the way. Estimated value of Kentucky's basketball program, which is the highest among all schools. It generates $22 million in revenue. Answer, $334.2 million. The difference between the average NBA rookie salary of $3.4 million and a Division I men's basketball scholarship for a year, 47 times. Amount wagered on the 2023 tournament, $10 billion. Amount wagered legally, $4 billion. So there's $6 billion in there somewhere missing. Number of tournament brackets completed, 80 million. Odds of filling out a perfect ballot, 1 in 9.2 quintillion. And the increase in beer sales during March Madness, 19%. Chicken wing sales go up 23%. And some guys will get vasectomies during this whole thing. Mira Sorvino still complaining about her father, Paul Sorvino, being left out of the in memoriam segment at the Oscars the other night. Okay. Gilbert Gottfried got left out. Anne Heche got left out. And who's that? William Hurt got left out. They didn't do it to your dad, Mira. They did it to everybody, including the fans. No need to internalize it, though. And Jimmy Kimmel, you may have, I almost mentioned this yesterday. Jimmy Kimmel, we've been talking about this now for over a month. He was referring to her during the show the other night as Rihanna. Rihanna's coming out here. Rihanna's going to do this. Rihanna is one of our guests tonight. And people are going, what an idiot. What an idiot. Jimmy Kimmel's mispronouncing her name all night. No. He was the one pronouncing it correctly. It is Rihanna. Everybody else is saying it wrong with Rihanna. And all you have to do is think about it for a minute. What's the song called by Fleetwood Mac? Rhiannon. It's not Rhiannon. It's the same word. And apparently about 6 months ago, she was like, yeah, everybody's mispronouncing my name. I don't make a big deal out of it. But no, it's pronounced Rihanna. So he does it right, and people complain. And the ratings were good, up 12% from last year. So it was almost 19 million people watched the thing. All right, we've got Bryan Cranston on with Jimmy Fallon tonight, Seth Rogen on with Kimmel, Stephen Colbert's got John Mayer, Bad Bunny and Ellie Goulding on with James Corden, and Seth Meyers has James Spader. Rachel Bilson, very, very attractive young woman. She was in that movie with Zach Braff called The Last Kiss. It's a damn good movie. I like Zach Braff. He gets himself involved in good projects. Scrubs was a great, you know, situation comedy. And Garden State. Jesus, Garden State. Great movie. So Rachel Bilson, very, very extremely attractive young woman. And if you do the math, I'm pretty sure you can figure this out. But yesterday, she, I guess she was involved in, was it an interview in Vanity Fair, maybe something like that? But she says she didn't have an orgasm from sex until she was 38 years old. 38! Well, she was blanking Bill Hader of Saturday Night Live for 10 years. So I'm doing the math here, and I'm saying that he was the guy that broke through, shall we say. We told you the other day that there are strong indications that Baker Mayfield is going to be Tom Brady's replacement for the Tampa Bay Bucks. Now we're hearing that the NFL insiders, and you know how much I love that word, by the way, the insiders. Anyhow, they're saying that Aaron Rodgers, the deal with him and the New York Jets is pretty much a done deal. All right, birthdays today. Simone Biles, gotta love her, from the Olympics, 26. Steph Curry, 35. Sasha Gray, she was in a number of very, very, shall we say, satisfying adult motion pictures. And then she went straight. She's 35 today. Billy Crystal, 75. Quincy Jones, 90. Michael Caine, 90. It was 51 years ago today, 1972. Burt Reynolds was the first nude male centerfold. Cosmopolitan magazine. And Monty Python and the Holy Grail premiered in L.A. on this date back in 1975. And star Republican legislator Lauren Boebert, well, her face must be red because her 17-year-old son has impregnated his, I don't know, 8-year-old girlfriend. And they're going to have a baby. So only one problem. For years, she's been saying she wants to ban sex education in schools. She thinks young girls should learn about sex the old-fashioned way, from her husband at a bowling alley, for example. And with that, the J.C. Corcoran podcast for Tuesday, March 14th, 2023, is in the can. 16 days until opening day. We're here every weekday morning at 11. Please spread the word if you can. You may email me, JC at JCOnTheLine.com, Facebook, the Showgram. With J.C. Corcoran, have a great day. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.